Oh, you will. Anyway.
This is when you were in Israel.
In Israel, yes. When we were in Israel in 65, right 2 years before the 67 war. It was on the 67.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All right. I think we were by ourselves on that trip. We revisited all the places where we had been, and in Jerusalem, at that time, we were only able to get as far as the Mandelbaum Gate. The exit was covered with barbed wire, and we could see over into the Arab city, which is now part of the old city, which is now part of Jerusalem. We visited, we spent some time in Haifa. We visited a lot, and this time we went through the Solomon Mines in a lot. These mines were discovered by Nelson Glick, one of his archaeological expeditions through Israel. There were many, many apartment houses built at that time. They were of rough brick. Not red brick, but sort of a grayish cement type brick. Low. Quite a colony of people there. There was a little shopping center, and the people seemed to be very content, even in spite of the intense heat that you find things in and a lot, which is the Dead Sea area. At Haifa we stayed at the Dan. In Jerusalem we stayed at the King David Hotel, which is a magnificent hotel. We used that as our headquarters and made our trips. You could take your choice of different bus trips, which we took. And then we went again to Haifa. We really did the whole circuit again. I can't remember anything different except that things were different and things were better. And the Israelis always seemed very content, and as a visitor you wouldn't know that anything was wrong, except every once in a while you would see truckloads of young people that were going into the service for their 2 years and singing and carefree as if they were going on a camping trip. Our last trip to Israel was 1973. At that point, we went with our friends, Mr. and Mrs. Harry Bowitz. This time, it was an ORT trip. We went through the Scandinavian countries. Norway, Denmark, Sweden. We spent 2 weeks on this trip, back to Israel, or to the Greek islands. First to the Greek islands. We spent 2 days in Athens and 7 days on the boat through the Isles, and then 2 more days in the city of Athens, which is a magnificent city. And then on to Israel. We spent a week there. 1973 was our last church visit. I forgot to say that we also had been, I can't remember which trip, but one trip that Irv and I took by ourselves, I think that was during the 70s. We made up our minds to take a trip just through Switzerland. We went all up the Jungfrau Mountain, the Rigiskorn. Switzerland is a magnificent country, and I think next to the United States, that's probably where I'd like to live. The people are clean and honest, and the food is good. And in Geneva, Switzerland, I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Hal Helfer, who is the head of the general director of the ORT, and the ORT Union, World ORT Union. And he and his wife were just charming to us. And in fact, one of the men, who is a native of Switzerland, outlined this trip for us that we took through Switzerland. And over the mountains and by train until we came to Lausanne, which then led us into, back into Italy and into Rome, which I love, and Florence and Naples, and then home. Oh, I forgot about Iran. We got into Iran there, and we went to Tehran. And that was a wonderful experience. We spent a whole weekend there. And the art school from Magnus, you come across a green fence, and on it are the art insignia. And behind that, you go through, and behind that are seven beautiful buildings. Practical, which house the various courses that the art students take. They also have dormitories. We saw every art school. Not that we went on an art trip for the schools, but incidentally, while we were in these various countries, we visited all of these schools, and it was really an eye opener because we went to Manila. In Morocco, I mentioned to you that we were in Morocco. We went to Manila with Mr. Pollock, who was our guide. And I will never forget the way the Jews lived there. In the squalor, the children would whine and remain. The flies were, they had meat hanging on hooks, the flies gathered on the meat. Little babies with the flies were so bad that their eyelids were covered with flies. There was a lot of eye disease there. They weren't set up clinics, and they tried to clean the area up, and eventually it was closed. And of course, it was over a period of years. So that was one experience that I had. I also met Jacques, who was the boy in the film, the Orth film, Lamella. I don't know if you ever saw Lamella. Well, I wish you would, because this is really, it's an educational experience.
Can you tell us what Orth stands for?
Organization for Rehabilitation Through Training. After the Jews were rescued from the Holocaust, what were you going to do with them? They were taken to various countries by the United Jewish Federation, the United Jewish Appeal, but without any skill, they would only be objects of charity. So the real object of ORT is to make a man self-sufficient. And we have schools all over Israel, a network. We have schools in 71 countries of the world. On five continents. And we have every course imaginable in mechanical skill, like automotive, refrigeration, air conditioning, television, wiring. In Milan, we were in Milan, and visited the school there. And it was amazing. We walked into one room, it was like a a television warehouse. These boys had made these televisions, and they were ready for export. In Tehran, we went to a boys' school and a girls' school. They have schools for girls and boys. Now the boys' school there, incidentally, to take a boy in or a girl into a school, they must pass a very rigid test because the curriculum is of such high caliber that unless the mental potential is there, it's impossible to train these people because they have to take courses. First, they give them prerequisites in even reading and writing and whatever prerequisite is necessary. So that they can at least have the fundamentals. Then they have to pass a very rigid test. And if they pass and they have the mentality and the potential, then they are enrolled in the school. And when they get to the school, we have three different kinds of it's like a breathing track. The boys and girls who can go for the whole 4 years are given special training, like the first 2 years in academic work. Then gradually they're given aptitudes to see what field they would fit into. Some of the people, the girls, become like dental technicians or nutritionists, dietary technicians, nursing. Not with degrees, but with diplomas. The boys also get diplomas for the work that they do. And after they graduate, 4 years of a large high school, they are eligible to get into a university. And many of them go on to either the University of Jerusalem in Jerusalem. We also have a school of engineering now in Jerusalem. They get into Technion. I mean, they have to pass these tests. They just don't take them willy-nilly. But the main thing is that for immigration purposes, if they come to the United States, they don't come in as paupers. They are placed through the New York agency in fields for which they are qualified.
Tell me, how did you become interested in Hort and involved?
I became involved in a very peculiar way. I had a very wonderful, two very wonderful friends. I still have the wife still in it. Dr. and Mrs. Jack Shohan, Shohan. They lived in Pittsburgh for about 3 years. He was a chemist. Harvard graduate, PhD, I think at the age of 19. He was absolutely brilliant. And his wife was a graduate of Simmons in Boston, nutrition. And he's a good Jew, and he became interested in Hort, probably through scientific associations. And when he became interested in something, it was deeply so. And then, of course, his wife became interested too. And he was a member of the World Ort Union, which is the highest level in the organization. And when they were in Pittsburgh, and they moved to New York after 3 years here, they moved to New York, and we, when Earth was brought to the furniture markets, we would spend at least one evening with them. We had dinner somewhere over the Charlie restaurant and we'd talk. And one night, Jack said, you'll have to excuse me, but I'll meet you at the Waldorf, and I have to go to a meeting. It's very important. And I said, Jack, you look so tired. Do you have to go? He said, yes, this is a World Ort Union meeting, and it's very important. And I said, what in the wide world is Ort? So he said, "May will tell you." So in the lobby of the Waldorf, the love for Orth was born. And I said to her, "How is it?" She told me too that Orth received his subvention from the United Jewish Appeal. And I said, "Well, I've always worked for the United Jewish Appeal, and how is it that I never heard of it?" And she said, "Well, I'll be glad to come and talk to you and get a little group together." I said, "Fine." So we arranged for her to come. And in the meantime, I called my friends, my contemporary age friends, who were some of them from Pittsburgh, and she they lived here, were her, their friends too. And I said, "I'm having May over, and she is going to talk about Orts. And I'd like you to come and see what we can do to help." They said, "Oh, Mary, you're crazy, you're out of your mind. We have 31 organizations." I said, "This is not like an average organization. This is something altogether different. It's worldwide, and it's helping a man to help himself." I said, "I just don't see how you can." "Well, we'll come. Don't expect anything from us." Well, when I had taught the temple, one of my pupils, some of my pupils were, you remember Barbara Weinberg, Barbara Rakoff now, right? And Nancy Werner, and there were 9 young girls, they'd just gotten married. Oh, Joan Tanzer. I called these girls one day and I said, "I have something to tell you, a friend of mine is coming, and this is it's not exactly an organization, but I'd like you to hear the story." When I called these girls, whose married names I did not know, and I said, "Mrs. Rakoff," I told her, she said, "Oh, that sounds interesting." Everyone said, "That sounds interesting." And when they came to the door, I discovered they were my kids. So that was it, number one. Then they decided that this was really something very worthwhile, but something new, and they needed a new baby. I mean, their mothers had been with Council and with Hadassah, and those were two major organizations at that time. And so they decided this would be their baby. So we got together, and my sister Ruth Weiner and I, we had TVs galore at our houses. And so we tried to get people in New York. And finally, we got to the point where we had a meeting at, we arranged for a big meeting at Westmoreland Country Club. We had 200 people. And that was how it got started. And through the efforts of Barbara and Joan, some of those other Nancy and some of those other young, I wish I could remember their names, but I can get them if you're interested. And that's how it came about. And at first, we all worked hard, and we had various incentives and so forth to get sponsoring it, because none of us knew very much about org. I never was an organization person myself. I always been in for things that were educational, like Sunday school and the Bible, and that sort of thing. But I had never done anything. In fact, I think I'm very bad when it comes to organizational things. So, we got to the point where after 4 years, we had enough members to divide ourselves up into 4 groups. And in each group, we tried to do it according to location, elected their own president and their own board, and worked for more members and to promote. We had various things like bake cookouts, bake sales, and functions that all organizations had, gimmicks to sponsor the idea. And until finally, today, I don't want to go into the whole detail because there's probably a history of that too. Oh, Demi Katz has the history. Demi Katz, if you're interested, has 3 volumes like this that she did. Of the beginnings of Orth, 1948, until the present day. And we're now, I think there must be about 24 chapters, I'm not quite sure. it's in that area. You know, some of the chapters came together, some other ones, and I'm too molded to one, because it's very difficult in these latter years to get people to assume responsibilities in organizations, because the girls want to go back to work. They're teachers or nurses or technicians of one kind or another, and so the challenge to go back, since their children are grown, is greater than the pull to do organizational work. And I don't know whether other organizations have this.
How many members does ORC have now?
ORC has about 2,400 members. And we're having a national conference in New York this coming, I think right now, in November. Because every 2 years they have a national convention. In between, they have a regional convention. We get people from overseas to come, and we've had students come, and we had the woman who ran the school for Iran came 1 year. And the conventions are very exciting and very stimulating. We always knew ideas. That's how our Act II was formed on Copeland Avenue. Jimmy conceived that idea long ago, coming back from the convention. We started out on Broad Street in East Liberty, and then from there moved ourselves up. We had a thrift shop, and then we were opening a thrift shop, and now we are really good clothes at Broad Street. I think there's one in that room.
Are you still active in that?
I am on the executive board, and I am active to a point. I mean, I don't. I'm not organizational. I do all I can for short-term jobs or anything with the girls. They know they can always count on whatever they want, and they just have to ask. And I'll do it.
Aside from the organizations in the community, did you ever work?
Yes, I was chairman of the women's division for United Leadership Bureau in 1956. That was the first year that United Leadership Bureau, Pittsburgh United Jewish Federation, I guess you call it there, had a two-line camp. The Jews were expelled from Egypt in 1956. So we had an emergency, and we also had our regular. And that was one of the greatest things. I mean, I think one of the things next door that gave me the most satisfaction in that I've ever done. That was a tremendous year.
Any other organizations that you...
I belong to all of them, but I don't do very much. I belong to the Dots on that for years. I used to have a study group for them in Bible for about 20 years. We used to meet every other week at each other's homes, and I did a I gave them a course in Jewish history, and then a course in Bible. And this was an intensive course in Bible. It takes something like 14 hours to study one chapter. And this was very intense. So I'm the one that benefited the most.
Where did you teach Sunday school?
Grocer. You should know that.
How many years did you teach?
I taught there for 25 years. I started teaching a 7-year-old in second grade. And then I went up to seventh grade where I taught Jewish history. And I did, I think, a 3-year period of study there, Jewish history, because I never was one page ahead of the class. There were two teachers and I who taught history there. And one was Fanny Alpern, and the other was Miss Rose Hartz, I think you know Rose. And the three of us, we brought our own text, and we really would spend hours and hours revising material from texts that were assigned, of which we knew, in order to present the material in depth to our class. I also, I had a scout troop for Temple for about 2002 organized Kid 5 at Temple. And he had the boys. And he would take them on hikes. And Barbara at that time was very cute. We had the flood in 1937. And people were calling our home. And Barbara answered the phone. And she said, I don't know. My father, first he was in the furniture business, then he was in the scat business, now he's in the Red Cross business. That gives you an idea of my husband and his activities. He's always willing to help and to do.
What do you think of Pittsburgh's Jewish life? Think that there is a great deal of activity in Pittsburgh?
Oh, I do. Definitely. I think that Pittsburgh is a very active Jewish community as regards all three sects. The Orthodox are very vibrant in their activities, and I think they they're very important because they're the yeast, so to speak, of Judaism. And without them, I mean, we would be soon melt into a nonchalant type of Judaism, which would end in, I don't know, of course, Judaism has always survived. But Orthodox Judaism is many, there are more Orthodox Jews and Jews who keep closer than you would imagine. And there always will be a survival, I think. It has to be of Orthodox Jews. As is indicated by the that new shul that they built with the Beth Jacob on Washington Street. Did you hear that? That's an indication to say that there are enough Jews to support this type of congregation. Of course, the Reform are strong and the Conservative are strong. For myself, I feel that Reform Judaism suits my needs best because I understand the prayer book, I can follow it. I feel that I'm a conservative, but I attend a conservative sense on occasion. And it's such a mixture of Orthodox and Reform, I guess that's why it's called conservative, but for me, I don't know where I am in a prayer book especially, but I think that our services are clean cut, they're to the point, there is a reverence for Judaism, for our faith in God, and we all have a deep respect for our rabbis, and I think our rabbis are good. If you go every Sabbath, you are sure to come away at the end of the year really having a deeper feeling for God and for your religion.
How do you feel about the Jewish people as a part of the general community?
I think the Jewish people stand out as statistics. I mean, point out the Jewish people stand out in all the professions. Skills, anything that is that demands education and special education. I think in which Jews participate, although their number is small, their names are well known. I also, I don't know if you've read the book, Jewish Mystic. It's written by a non-Jew.
He's,
Jehaz, I think his name is. I have the book here. Anyway, did you read that book?
No, but I heard him speak. Wasn't he here last year?
Well, he, in the beginning, points out why Jews stand out as they do in mental accomplishments and in the professions. He says said that during medieval times, the fiefs, or the landowners, who had families, would send their oldest sons to the highest profession they could think for them to become, would be a priest. So they sent them to become priests. Well, priests aren't allowed to marry. So that with that, whether the strain, when the strain was really as highly developed as what the corn folk was,